Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Believe in Bengals podcast right here on Bally Sports Ohio. Solomon Wilcots, and right now joining me, a very special guest, PFF senior analyst John Costco is joining us on the show. John, how you been doing?
I'm doing great. You know, better than Lions fans, unfortunately for them. But I enjoyed the football yesterday. It was great. How about you?
Doing great. Look, this is a special edition of the Believe in Bingo podcast because, look, we got to take a look back at Championship Sunday at both games. And, you know, I wanted to start by just kind of talking about Dan Campbell and some of those fourth down calls. Everyone around the country, John, is talking about the fact that he didn't go for the field goal. He was going for the knockout punch. I want to know from you and everyone at PFF, what does the data suggest in those two situations, given what the score was? Because I know he was trying to land a knockout blow, right? And really Absolutely. Take out the 49ers and take back the momentum, which they seem to have lost after squandering a 17-point lead in that second half collapse. What does the data suggest?
Yeah, you know, so Michael Bagley was 68%. From 40 plus in his career. So you're thinking, all right, Dan Campbell, my guy only makes 70% of these, maybe even less because we're at the 30 and 28 yard line. So making both of those is not an undeal. You'd expect maybe to make one of two of those. There's like a 90% chance of making that. When you look at those situations, I don't mind it from a personal standpoint of you're wanting to have a knockout punch in this game. You're trying to win this game right then and there. Essentially, you get those one of those two, you're probably going to do that. And they had it, you know, like they had the drop pass from Josh Reynolds, unfortunately. But the data says to go for it. And hey, you want to put this game away. I liked it a lot. You know, the other interesting decision, too, that really aren't many people talking about because they kicked the field goal was at the end of the half. Yeah. And they, you know, that one actually said, analytics said to go for this as well. Actually, it was a stronger go for it than the ones that in the second half where they didn't get it. So, I understand at the end of the half, and just take the points. We're up three scores now. You come out in the second half, maybe score again. They had that, too, in the second half. It's just the mistakes that they made, you know, drops, and it was
rough.
So
you're saying it wasn't the decisions to go for it or not. It was the lack of execution, because on one of the fourth down plays, they hit Josh Reynolds. He tried to catch it with his arms, by the way, not his hands. Yeah. And, of course, he wasn't able to catch it. And now they turn it over on downs. So you're saying that Dan Campbell can look at his ownership group today and say, look, we done this all season long. In fact, they did it at a higher rate on fourth down than any other team this century, right? Yeah. And look at where it got them. And now they do it in this game, and everyone wants to second guess them. But more importantly, it was about the lack of execution on the play, not necessarily the decision itself.
Absolutely. Because, like, you know, think about it, Josh Reynolds catches that ball. That's a dagger in them. That hits him, should have hit him in hands. That should be a catch for him. You know, you talk about the second one a few plays before. Jared Goff threw a beautiful deep ball into the end zone for Jamison Williams to catch it. He dropped it. I mean, he got his feet tangled up, you know, and it got jostled out of control a little bit there, but that ball was right there. They catch that one. It's like, that's another dagger. Two plays later, they're looking at another fourth down or whatever. So it's the execution that wasn't there. You know, you can question some of the play calling that the Lions did in the second half of that game, but the execution on those, specifically on those fourth downs, just wasn't there for them. They got pressured on that. The second one, they got pressured really quickly. Goff was trying to scramble out of the pocket, try to throw it to Amon-Ra St. Brown on a scramble drill. That's not his game. He's got to be able to have a clean pocket. If you get pressure on him, it's, you know, the offensive line didn't execute in that one. So, you know, I don't mind the decisions at all. I think they're perfectly reasonable. And they're not, it's not a done deal that guy's going to make those field goals. Like, that's he's right. 68 from his career from 40 plus. And you're talking about 40, 46 and 48 yarders now at this point. So that's even harder.
BetOnline remains your top spot for all of your live betting action and contests. NFL, college football, UFC, NHL are all in full swing. BetOnline is your number one source for wagering news, odds, trends, and predictions with both desktop and mobile access at any time. Head to BetOnline today and use promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for 50% off your first deposit. That is a 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline, where the game starts.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
People are having fun with this one, though, because it's been a hot topic coming off the NFC Championship game that saw the San Francisco 49ers overcome a 17-point halftime deficit. Of course, their quarterback, Brock Purdy, was phenomenal in this game. And as you well know, he's been catching a lot of flack. There are people who don't want to seem to give Brock Purdy his due. He was the 262nd player taken in the 2022 draft, which means he was the last player taken in the 2022 draft. However, he clearly has outplayed his draft grade. And yesterday, and bringing his team back from a 17-point halftime deficit, is he changing minds now? Is he seen now as a playmaker? Are people still looking at him as a game manager? And what does the data say about his contribution to that comeback that we saw on Sunday?
Yeah, you want to talk about stepping up in the biggest moment of your career? He did that. Like,
that's right.
You're talking about the do or die situation that you have to win this game. You have to play your best. I mean, it doesn't matter if you did that in week 10 of the regular season. It matters now in the NFC Championship game. He did it, right? So you're talking 8-for-11, 126 yards, a touchdown, two big-time throws in that third quarter alone with an 84 grade PFF grade. Like, he came out in that third quarter, put that team on his back and said, we're going to go win this championship game. And they did. And he led it. You know, that was him. And you're talking about the fourth quarter, second half of games is where you win or lose games most of the time in the NFL. Nice. He had the second best PFF grade in the second half of the regular season, also in the fourth quarter of the regular season and second half of the season. So he really came on strong in the second half of the season. Since week 10, he's been phenomenal in the do or die type of situations where his team needs him to step up. He's done that, and he did it again in this game. He did it last week against the Packers. They were down. They needed him to come through in the clutch. He did on that game-winning drive in the fourth quarter. He's 2 weeks in a row now in the playoffs. He's shown that he can be the guy to lead them to a championship.
He was a playmaker. I saw him make plays with his legs. Mm-hmm. I saw him. You and I, we talk about scoring drive percentage. What did they score on 4 of their 5 drives in the second half of the game?
Yeah.
I mean, he was incredible in terms of what he did. He was not game managing. When things broke down, he made the plays. He improvised and made a lot of plays, either in the passing game, throwing off schedule, or when things broke down, I saw him use his legs as well as we saw any quarterback on Championship Sunday, John.
Absolutely. You know, he when it was not there, things broke down, he was able to get out of the pocket, scramble, and get the first down with his legs. When it was dialed up for him, he was making accurate throws. Yep. And then when the pressure was coming, he was able to navigate it and throw it where he needed to. There was a throw he made to Juwan Jennings that, you know, obviously he had the one-handed. That was a great throw because he's running to his left, has to go crossbody back across the field.
It was Mahomes-like, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if it was Mahomes that made that throw, everybody had been raving about it. And
yes,
but you know, they're more focused on that catch, which was a phenomenal catch, but you had to put the perfect touch on that to make it a catchable ball in that type of situation, running away from where you're trying to throw it. I mean, he was making plays, and you can't really argue about the results now that the 49ers have with him as a quarterback. He took him to the Super Bowl. You know, last year he was a guy that you don't know what happens in that game, right? Like he tore some ligament in his elbow or whatever it was that he tore. You don't know what's going to happen in that game. Maybe he leads them to that victory again against the Eagles, but he's definitely outplayed his draft stock for sure.
Yeah.
He's a guy that, you know, interesting at Iowa State. I liked him as his freshman and sophomore years. I got turned off on him because of that basically one play. And this is where you get into trouble with one play scouting. Everybody probably knows he's getting sacked and he just kind of this YOLO throws it backwards into the arms of a TCU player and he returns it for a touchdown. I was like, nah, he's off my board. I can't play with that guy.
Poor guy.
Teaches me a lesson when it comes to evaluation. Right, you can't right. do one play scouting like that. So
I always liked him at Iowa State. Having played in the Big 8 conference, which is mm-hmm. now the Big 12, my entire career at the University of Colorado, we played Iowa State. I thought they had some good players that came out of that program, right? Absolutely. And I always knew that it was a good program. And I remember just watching him play. And I love the fact that he was a four-year starter. He had played in a lot of games. He won. He won more games over the course of his four-year career than any other quarterback over their four-year career in school history. That tells you something. So he did lift a program that normally people aren't talking about. They were talking a lot about Iowa State when he was there.
Because of him.
Yeah. Breece Hall. Yeah, and Breece Hall and guys like that with it. But it was because of him. And that, I always give players credit for that. If you prove to me that you can lift an institution, that you can put them on the map, then that means you're ready for the next assignment, which is to carry a franchise on your shoulders every single Sunday, because that's what quarterbacks in our league do. So I think that part of it does carry over, and we've seen that happen with him. Let's talk about the Baltimore Ravens. Of course, they lose in the AFC Championship game 17-10 to the Kansas City Chiefs. And look, their offense, along with Lamar Jackson being criticized for their failures on third down plays, John, and really their inability to handle a blitzing defense by the Kansas City Chiefs. What does the data say about the areas of deficiency for Lamar and the Baltimore Ravens offense?
Yeah, on third downs in this game, they're 27%, 3 for 11. Obviously, when you have those numbers, it's not going to cut it, especially against Mahomes, right? And so when you look at it, you know, closer, their offensive line was actually pretty good. I think they held up well. They graded well for us. They got a little bit of pressure on third downs in those situations, but Lamar just didn't play well on third downs. He had a 29.6 PFF grade on third downs.
Wow.
I mean, he basically missed most of his throws. He was 1 for 6 or 1 for 7 on third downs in terms of completions. Yeah, he had one drop in there, but he was missing a lot of throws there. Mm-hmm. Kansas City, kudos to them. They deployed a dime defense, so 6 defensive backs or more on 9 of those occasions. They ran man coverage on 7 times. They blitzed them 5 times on third downs. And then the Ravens, what they did is they trotted out 11 personnel so that, you know, Kansas City obviously matched that with their dime packages. They passed it 8 times, ran it 3 times. They converted 2 of the runs for first downs, only 1 of 8 on passes. So essentially, Lamar didn't play well, didn't read the defense as well in those situations, and that's ultimately the reason for their deficiencies on third downs. You know, like there's one occasion where he scrambled and they ended up actually converting on the fourth down, but it was in the fourth quarter where he took a sack on third down. They're deep in their own territory when he was scrambling out. He had some open receivers. You know, I'm not sure exactly what his read progression was on those, but like, he's a guy that like held a ball too long. Like, you know, hey, if that first down's there, he's usually taken off on it. So I don't, you know, he just wasn't playing very well on those third downs.
Yeah.
And good enough to, you know, for obviously them to win the game.
He wasn't seeing the field very well for whatever reason. I do think that whenever you crowd the secondary and put extra defenders back there, I think that can throw off some of your normal looks, right? Obviously, when you're playing a little more zone behind some of that blitzing pressure, that can throw off your looks, particularly if it's hybrid coverage. In other words, one covers to one side of the field, another covers to the other side. And quarterbacks who aren't sure what they've seen, John, you and I both know this, they tend to hold it a little too long, right?
Absolutely.
They tend to hold it because it's like trying to solve a math problem. You're taking a little too long, fella. You know?
Yep.
And the clock is ticking. And that's why I was really concerned. 4 sacks on Lamar.
Yeah.
You don't see that often. He's more like the jackrabbit that defensive lineman can't catch, and the Chiefs were able to get to him, weren't they?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting about the sacks too, is that he got out of a lot of sacks and early in that game too. That obviously the first touchdown to Zay Flowers, that was nuts. That was phenomenal play by him. He slipped out of the sack, threw it deep to Zay Jones for the touchdown. Zay Flowers, sorry. But you know, with him, you know, one of the things that the Chiefs were doing defensively to confuse him was they would run cover two man a couple times in this game. And generally when you have that, like the quarterback, you sees that and it's like, okay, I'm going to be free to run. But what the Chiefs did is that they had two linebackers spying Lamar, whichever which way the back would release. One of them would take the back, the other would take Lamar, and they would pass that guy off. So it wasn't clear in terms of like who was going to be free to spy Lamar, and he didn't know that, right? And when you do that, if you get initial pressure on him, that other guy comes and makes a play on him. Like that was a nice wrinkle from Steve Spagnuolo.
Drew Tranquil was phenomenal. Drew Tranquil, I thought he gave him. Remember, he played instead of Willie Gay, who was out for the game, and Drew Tranquil really factored in that kind of scenario that what you talked about in terms of what Steve Spagnuolo drew up. You also have to have guys who can execute that kind of play. I want to ask you this, because typically if you go 12 personnel and the opposing team goes nickel, and in this case dime, right?
Yeah.
Don't you want to check run against that? In the Ravens, even though the score was very close, they literally abandoned the run game.
Yeah. If you want to talk about the way to beat the Chiefs defense, you need to run it. And exactly. I think they got, you know, you can talk about the Lions too. They stopped running it in the second half. Maybe they got scared because of the fumble. The Ravens, they were never really out of this game. Yeah, the Chiefs kind of dominated this game in the first half, but the second half, their defense really stepped up, and Lamar, they kept throwing the ball instead of running it. And the Chiefs' run defense is not very good. Like, they're one of the, you know, they're in bottom third of the league in terms of run defense and of an efficiency standpoint. They show in this game, you can run this more often with him. That's where your strength is when you can have that run pass option with Lamar and you're not forcing yourself into a one-dimensional team. Yeah. Man, and that's what makes Lamar and that Ravens offense dangerous. But if you're just asking him to drop back 50 times in a game, that's usually not a good recipe for success for that Ravens team.
Look, the Ravens defense, phenomenal defense all season long. Led the league in points allowed per game. Led the league in sacks. This is a formidable group. Led the league in terms of their ability. At least they were top five, I think, in takeaways. But in this game, Patrick Mahomes scored 17 points on this defense and scored, I think, what, touchdowns on their first two drives. Zero turnovers against a defense that takes it away with great regularity. He targeted Travis Kelce 11 times. Travis Kelce made 11 catches. Every time they threw the ball to him, he caught it. How good was Patrick Mahomes? What does the data really tell us about how good we saw him play in this game against a very great defense?
Yeah, you knew it was going to be a special night for him. You know, a first drive, they convert that fourth down. He's rolling right, throws it cross body across, you know, to Kelce on that crosser. Just perfect accuracy away from tight coverage. He has to put it in a perfect spot. That first touchdown, Kyle Hamilton's perfect coverage. He's blanketing him all over the, and Mahomes just puts it in a perfect spot. One hand catches it for Travis Kelce. It's like you can't defend against that type of stuff. Like when they're on, it's the ultimate duo, and we've seen it time and time again throughout his career with he and Kelce. So, you know, in the first half alone, he had a PFF grade of 90.4, you know, a near success rate of like 60% from a passing standpoint. Mm-hmm. EPA per play, you know, expected points added of 0.405, which, you know, that's an elite number. And it doesn't really matter what the number is. It was elite level types of efficiency that the offense was putting up there. The Ravens did find their footing in the second half, like we talked about. You know, they scored 17 in the first half, didn't score at all in the second. I think the Chiefs kind of went really conservative in the second half with their play calling. You saw a lot of first down runs for them, especially to open up the drive.
They weren't going to turn it over, John. They weren't going to turn it over, right? They weren't going to beat themselves.
Exactly. And that's, you know, they wanted to protect the ball. They trusted that their defense was going to be able to stop Lamar, and they did. Lamar made the mistakes that you kind of forced them into, and they didn't feel like they needed to really stretch it more in the second half. I mean, I think you want to kind of step on the throats a little bit more, but hey, it's Patrick Mahomes, and he was phenomenal in that first half, and really essentially that's what won them the game.
Chiefs defense was phenomenal, forcing the Baltimore Ravens to commit two turnovers in the fourth quarter in the red zone. The Zay Flowers fumble right at the goal line proved to be costly. And then on another trip down inside the red zone, Lamar gets intercepted, throwing the ball into the end zone, into a crowd of defenders for the Kansas City Chiefs. And that's why a lot of people are questioning his performance in that game. Let's talk about the Super Bowl. It's a rematch of Super Bowl 54 in 58 in Las Vegas. It's going to be the Kansas City Chiefs, San Francisco 49ers. What is it about this 49ers defense that maybe Patrick Mahomes should be most concerned about?
Yeah, so this defense isn't the juggernaut we saw it was a year ago, and it's not even what it was early in the season. So they've had some struggles in the second half of the season, but they have some really good pieces that's going to make life difficult for him. So you're talking about right up front, Nick Bosa. In my eyes, he was the second-best defensive player in the NFL this year behind Myles Garrett. He had the second-best pass rush grade, the second-best overall grade for any defender. And now, including the playoffs, has 118 pressures on the season. Wow. I mean, he, you know, just because the sack numbers weren't there this year like they were last year, he's still getting after the quarterback and making life difficult for him. We saw it happen in the NFC Championship game. He had two sacks in the second half on Jared Goff. Pressures eventually will lead to sack, and he took care of business there. You look at the second level, Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw, two. The best linebacker tandem in the NFL in my eyes is Fred Warner. I thought was like this probably the he was best linebacker individually this year, probably the fifth or sixth best defensive player at any position this year. He makes those two both are super athletic. They can make plays that most linebackers aren't being able to make. They can get beat initially on a route that a tight end or a wide receiver is making, and they can recover as good as like a defensive back. That's how good those guys are. And then you look at the secondary. It's not like a great secondary, but it's a good one that doesn't really have weaknesses. But the one piece that you don't really want to pick on is Tre'Davious Ward. He led the NFL in pass breakups this year, and it's just been a blankets wide receivers, you know, snap in, snap out. So those are the pieces, you know, you have to really worry about those. But I mean, it's Mahomes and Kelce and Rashee Rice has been phenomenal this year as well as a rookie. So like, you know, you have to feel like. And you like Kelce's matchup against anybody.
One last question before we let you go, John. You have the master, the age-old veteran and head coach Andy Reid, one of the greatest play callers and play designers that we've ever seen in our game, going up against the steel mind of and the youth of a Kyle Shanahan, who's been here before but has not been able to seal the deal. Whether it was with Matt Ryan when he was in Atlanta as the offensive coordinator under Dan Quinn, or in of course, Super Bowl 54, when he led his 49ers in Miami against the same Kansas City Chiefs team. Who has the edge? What does the data say about Kyle Shanahan, Andy Reid? What do you got?
Yeah, like you said, two of the best offensive minds in the NFL today, arguably in NFL history. You know, look at Kyle Shanahan's career. It's almost kind of mirroring Mike Shanahan, his father's, in terms of like not being able to get to that pinnacle until very late in his career. You know, obviously you hope that it's going to be sooner than later for Kyle. You know, look at the 49ers over the past 2 years. They're second best in offensive success rate. They're the best in the EPA per play. Chiefs are fourth in both categories, where you got the 49ers grades, they're the top of the top of any team, whereas the Chiefs are fifth in that. You know, the ultimate trump card of all this game is going to be Patrick Mahomes, because he can turn a dead play, a bad play call, into a spectacular one that's going to go for 60 for a touchdown, or whatever it may be. You know, converting that third down. That was maybe a bad play call is on first and second down. It doesn't matter. Third and 20, he's going to make that happen. You know, you don't think of Brock Purdy as being that type of a guy. And I think, you know, from a coaching, pure coaching standpoint, what's, you know, transpired over the past years, I might give the edge to Kyle Shanahan in terms of that. That's so difficult to say, right? Because Andy Reid's a future Hall of Famer, and he's still at the peak of his coaching career. So I think if you're talking about, does a guy get the absolute most out of his team? I would say that, you know, Kyle Shanahan's doing a phenomenal job with that, because obviously, you know, nobody thought Brock Purdy was going to be the type of guy that he is right now, leading you to a potential Super Bowl. And the fact that he's been able to do that over the past years is really impressive.
Well, we should let people know it is a rematch from Super Bowl 54. In that game in Miami, San Francisco 49ers, midway through the fourth quarter, had a 20-10 lead. Nick Bosa, it was his rookie season. He was all over the place getting after Patrick Mahomes. And then on a 3rd-and-15 play with about 8 minutes to go, I'll never forget it, Patrick Mahomes laced the sky with a 44-yard completion down the field to Tyreek Hill. In fact, they would connect on another big play, and they would just continue to come back and win it. And they would go on to score 21 unanswered points to win that game, 31-20. It was incredible. So think about that. That was the birth of the Grim Reaper that we know as Patrick Mahomes. He could do that to you. When you think you got him, they had a 10-point lead, 8 minutes to go, and then the Chiefs reeled off 21 points, 21 straight points to win that game. It was just incredible. Hey, John, thank you for sharing with us. Great information, my friend. We want to thank you for joining us right here on the Believe in Bengal podcast on Bally Sports Ohio. Everyone, thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.